Okay. Matthew chapter 22, verse 1. And Jesus answered and spoke unto them again by parables and said, "The kingdom of heaven is likened to a certain king which made a marriage for his son, and sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come. And again he sent forth other servants, saying, Tell them which are bidden, Behold, I have prepared my dinner, my oxen and my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready, come to the marriage. And they made light of it, and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his merchandise. And the remnant took his servants, and entreated them spitefully, and slew them. And when the king heard thereof, he was wroth, and he sent forth his armies, and destroyed those murderers, and burned up their city. Then said he to his servants, The wedding is ready, but they which were bidden were not worthy. Go ye therefore into the highways, and as many as you shall find, bid to the marriage. So the servants went out to the highways and gathered together all, as many as they found, both bad and good, and the wedding was furnished with guests. Excuse me. And when the king came to see the guests, he saw there a man which had not a wedding garment. And he said to him, Friend, how camest thou in hither not having a wedding garment? And he was speechless. Then said the king to the servants, Bind him hand and foot, and take him away, and cast him into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen. Then went the Pharisees, and took counsel how they might entangle him in his talk. And they sent out unto him their disciples with the Herodians, saying, Master, we know that thou art true, and teachest the ways of God in truth. Neither carest thou for any man, because thou regardest not the person of man. Tell us, therefore, what thinkest thou? Is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not? But Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, Why tempt ye me, ye hypocrites? Show me the tribute money. And they brought him unto him a penny. And he said unto them, Whose is this image and superscription? And they said unto him, Caesar's. Then he said unto them, Render therefore to Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. When they had heard these words, they marveled and left him and went their way. The same day came to him the Sadducees, which say there is no resurrection, and asked him, saying, Master, Moses said, If a man die having no children, his brother shall marry his wife and raise up seed to his brother. Now there were with us seven brethren. The first one he had married a wife, deceased, having no issue, left his wife unto his brother. Likewise the second also unto the third and to the seventh. And last of all, the woman died. Therefore, in the resurrection, whose wife shall she be of the seven, for all have had her? And Jesus answered and said unto them, You do err, not knowing the Scriptures nor the power of God. For in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are as the angels of God in heaven. But in touching the resurrection of the dead, have you not read that which was spoken unto you by God, saying, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. And when the multitude heard this, they were astonished at his doctrine. But when the Pharisees had heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they were gathered together. Then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him and saying, Master, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus said to him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. The second is like unto it, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. While the Pharisees were gathered together, Jesus asked them, saying, What think you of Christ? Whose son is he? And they said to him, The son of David. He said unto them, Well, how then does David in spirit call him Lord, saying, The Lord said to me, My Lord, sit thou on my right hand till I make thy enemies your footstool. If David then call him Lord, how is he his son? And no man was able to answer him a word, neither durst any man from that day forth ask him any more questions. Ooh, we got a mouthful here tonight. There's some good understanding in this chapter. Back to the first verse. It says, And Jesus answered, literally he responded and spoke to them again, what? In parables. Jesus said he would never speak to the multitudes or into the people without speaking in parables. So everything he taught, He might have been telling something that was actually going on, but it was still what? It was still a parable, see? People ask me all the time about stories of the Old Testament. The flood, Adam and Eve. Is it real? Well, I don't care whether it was a reality of ever happening. I need to see what the parable has to teach me how to live my life. I need to know what the spiritual implications of this message that he's giving us, because it's not a history lesson. Because me knowing that there was a man and woman somewhere who started this race won't help me live my life one bit. But now what they did and how this was put together and knowing the spiritual implications of this thing can show me how to walk my life today. Can that make a change in my life? See, that will change my life. But by not knowing anything more than an old history lesson about what happened back there thousands of years ago, it won't change nobody. If you don't believe me, just look at the church history for the last 6,000 years, or last 2,000 years of church history. Man has never got any better, have they? Man can't get any better except by the Spirit of God. See? They're trying to do it by history lessons. And you hear these people get on TV and radio and they preach these history lessons about all these old things that they did back here. And what good does that do you today? I don't live back there, do you? I don't live in history. I don't live in the past. I don't even live in the future. There's only one place I live. Where is it? Now. It's in the present tense right now. Because I'm not to tomorrow. There is no tomorrows. Because if midnight tonight, it'll be today just like today is. It'll be today. I'll never live to see tomorrow because there's only one day. It's called the Lord's Day. Hello? It's every day. It's His day. It's right now. So He's speaking to them in parables. And He says, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a certain king. So He's telling us that this parable He's telling us is a parable, isn't it? And He says, this is what it's like. A certain king, right? And the word certain here is a natural man. You know, the word certain is literally the word anthropos, which is speaking of a human man or a natural king, which made a marriage feast for his son. Do you see the parable there? The king set up the feast for who? Now, isn't that what God did? God set up a feast, a marriage feast for his sons, didn't he? We're the bride. He says now, and sent forth his servants to call them that they that were bidden or were called to the marriage feast, and they would not come. Now, what does that parallel? No, not first fruit. What it parallels is the Jewish nation, religion, okay? And when religious people are bidden, they will never come to the supper, will they? It was like the Jewish order. The Jewish order was called. Jesus said today, in a few more chapters here, he says, today the kingdom is rest from your hands. Samuel tell that to Saul? Today the kingdom is rest from your hand because of being disobedient and unfaithful to God, didn't he? See, that's what he's trying to say here. He's showing you that this old order of religion will not take you through to the kingdom of God. There was a day and a time when the law was a beneficial thing, true or false. Paul even said, hey, if it wasn't for the law, I wouldn't even know you wasn't supposed to be covetous or greedy. See, you wouldn't know. If the law wasn't there, you wouldn't know right from wrong, would you? If there was no speed limit on the road out here, what would happen? And you got a lot of trouble, don't you? See, there has to be something to put us in order. And if there's a law here that says, do not exceed 55 miles an hour, and you do, what do you know you did? You broke the law. And there's a punishment to the law, see? And if I'm not badly mistaken, the book says, Paul wrote in Galatians, he said the law was a school teacher to us. Right? Until a time appointed of the Father. Is that right? So the law was there for a reason, and that's what he's speaking of here. The ones that were the first called, and they wouldn't come. And it said, against he sent out other slaves or servants, telling them which are called, behold, I have prepared my dinner, and the oxen and my fatlings are killed. Okay? Now, what does the oxen and the fatlings represent? Jesus was represented as a beast of burden. He was represented in the Gospels as an ox. Remember the four faces in Ezekiel? The face of an ox, the eagle, the lion, and the man. And see, that was one of his faces. He was the servant. He was the beast of burden. He was the ox. And he says, my ox and my fatlings are killed. What's that say? First fruit. Okay? You know what a fatling is? Does anyone know what a fatling is? What would you think it is? Well, it could be, we're not talking about pigs here because Jews and pigs didn't mix. Okay? Okay. But it's the beef or the goats or the sheep, whatever they were eating, but they pinned them up. That means they were restrained. They couldn't do what they wanted to do. Does that make sense? And then they force-fed them. They give them plenty of food. What did they give them, though? Grain. What does grain represent? The Word of God. So he said, my ox has been killed, and my ones has been raised up with the Word. Who's that? That's first fruit. See, there's your first fruit. They were raised on the Word. You hear me? Can you see it? That's the Word of God. He said they're killed. And all things are ready, coming to the marriage. But they made light of it, or they neglected it, and went their ways, one to his own farm and another to his own merchandise. See? That's what's going on in our lives today. Do you know how many people realize, yes, Jesus died on the cross. Yes, his first fruit are being crucified with him daily, just like Paul said. I'm dying daily. Yeah, it's all going on. But you know what? They neglect it. They make light of it. How many people in the world today, what did you just talking about earlier, Alice, about the nature? They're not serious about it. They're not seeking after God's face, are they? They just want to see his hand, get a little bit of gift from him, see? What can God give me? It's not what it's about. So, what they're trying to do is make light of it, or neglect it, and go their own way and do their own things. I've heard people say, you know, well, I wouldn't mind being a Christian as long as God let me do what I want to do. But the book says we're a servant, right? Well, the word is doulos, literally means slave. If I am a slave, and Bob, you are the master, what could I tell you to do?
If I'm the master,
and I'm the slave,
what can you tell me to do?
Uh-huh.
You better not tell me too much to do if I'm the master.
That's the point I'm trying to make. He is our master, true or false? See? We didn't ask him to be master. He made this choice, didn't he? He set it all up. And I haven't got no right to tell him what to do. I've got no right to put conditions on my life. I'll do this if you'll do that. Do I? All I can do is live what God has given me to do. I'm a servant. I'm a slave of God. I'm a bond servant. Then I got to do what my master tells me. And if my master says do it, what am I supposed to do? Do it. There's no questions asked. You just do it. And today, and he's showing you this, this is what happened in the Old Testament coming through, and he's using that and telling you in this parable, it's the same thing that's going to happen in most people's lives. The same thing's going to happen. When you are called to come, how many really come?
A few.
Okay. They've all been called, but many are called, but few are chosen. Okay. Most of them have been called, but they just don't want to come. Yeah, they're all invited. And he says, and the remnant took his servants and he abused, literally it says, and treated them spitefully. Literally it says, abused them spitefully and then slew them or killed them. Okay. Now, today, they're not really killing people, are they? Now, some of the third world countries and other countries, yeah, some of that stuff's going on. But in our country today, and it's just as prevalent as it is right here, people are being slain. But how are they being slain? Huh? By the tongue. They're being misled. They're being slandered, lied about. And didn't Jesus say, they'll say all manner of evil about you and lie about you? What's the next verse say? You might read the next one. He said, you're blessed. And great is your reward in heaven, or the spirit realm. See? So we know that when people say these things and about us, like the man I spoke about earlier, who got his head nearly peeled off because he told this woman about some truths of the Bible, and she was just got through saying, "I believe everything in the Bible." And he said, "Well, oh, you do? Well, let me show you. Do you believe this one?" And she nearly peeled his head off. See? Those things happen. And if those happen, should we be upset? See? If we are still using our understanding about what people should do and how they should understand, just because I understand, does that mean that everybody I talk to understands what I say?
No.
See? If we think that way, we're going to get upset all the time. See? I'm speaking spiritual things. And didn't Paul say in 1 Corinthians, or 2 Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 2, I believe, he said, the natural man receives nothing from the Spirit of God because it's spiritually discerned. See? And if they're thinking with their natural mind, they don't even hear what you say. They haven't got a clue what you're saying. I spent some time with a man this week, Tuesday morning, I think, maybe, for a few hours. And we talked for hours. That man never heard a word I said. Because the whole time, he was talking the biggest part of the time. And when he did give me a chance to speak, he was already thinking about what he was going to say next as soon as he could pry the floor back from me. And a few seconds later, he'd have it back. And I never got a complete thought process put out the whole time. He didn't hear a word I said. I talked to that man once before for 3 hours. And the next time I met him, he didn't even know who I was. After I talked to him 3 hours. Do you think he listened to anything I said? All he was doing was trying to tell me how much he knew. And he didn't want to know anything about God. He already knows it all, I think. So it's okay. That's the way people are. And that's what this is trying to teach us. It's going to happen all the time. We're going to be abused, spitefully, and slayed. How about that? Ugh, slayed a new, that was a new word, wasn't it?
Slum.
But when the king heard thereof, he was enraged. And he sent forth his armies and destroyed the murderers. And when it says murderers, this word doesn't just say like an accidental killing somebody. The language actually says this. It's always an intentional homicide. What they did it intentionally, didn't they? Well, I mean, literally, they knew what they were doing. They wanted to. For how many years did the church go around killing people? Every war that's went on this earth has become because of religion, hasn't it? It's been religion somewhere in there that caused it. And how many of them went around for years killing people in the name of God? Didn't they? Probably still doing it. I'm not keeping up on that stuff anymore, but they're probably still doing it. And he burned up their city. When he burned up their city, what did he burn up? Their earthly protection. See, most people think the city's a safe place. that kind of thinking gets you in trouble today, wouldn't it? The cities are not a safe place. Then said he to his servants, or his slaves, the wedding or the marriage feast is ready. What is it? It is ready. Present tense. Right now. When Jesus said this, it's present tense. There was people right then that had the capacity to walk into the marriage feast. If God opened their eyes. Just like he did with Peter. Okay? Did I miss a verse here? No. Okay. They said to his servants, the wedding is ready, but when they were bidden, but they which were called are not worthy. The word were is literally are. They're not worthy. Okay. God called people, but is everybody worthy? Okay. If they will not heed the call, can they possibly be worthy? Okay. When God speaks, I think he speaks to all of humanity. I really believe that. But if they don't have the ears to hear because they don't want to, because it's uncomfortable, the cost is too high to speak that truth, guess what? They'll end up mocking and making fun of what's going on.
He was talking about the future, right?
Yeah, but that's talking about the religious folk in our day right now. And this can also be an internal thing, see? Not just an external religious folk out there, but religion in me can be the same way. See, I can do the same thing. God can speak to me, and I reject what he says because of the religion that's within me. Do you understand what I'm saying? people don't realize this is an internal thing, and we really need to see it internal. We can see it in our setting around us, but we need to see it inside too. So it's something to teach me first to see myself, how I can reject what God says because of the religious teaching.
Are you going to be married to this other thing?
Yeah. That's it. Do I want to be married to God, or is everything else more important than that God? See, he said the one went to his farm, and another went to his merchandise, to his own stuff, see? But if I've been purchased by his blood, what right do I have to say, this is mine? What right do I have to say anything belongs to me? I might have temporary possession of something, but it's really not mine, is it?
Well, like you said before, when Saul, in the old order, Saul thought that kingdom was all set up.
For him.
Right.
He thought that was his, and Samuel come right along very quickly and said, today the kingdom's rest from your hand. See? And this thing is, we have to be obedient to hold possession of the kingdom. We can't be unfaithful and do what we want to do. And that's why we have all these thousands of denominations of religion all over the world, is because when God speaks to somebody, then all of a sudden they become a mountain in their own right. Like Adam said, I will. I'll be like the Most High. I'll sit on the mountain. I'll be on the west sides of the north. I'll be in control. And guess what happens when they do that? They build them another denomination. What was it, the Vineyard Movement? John Wimber? He built a kingdom. And I know John Wimber didn't start that thing that way. I know John Wesley didn't start that thing that way. But the Wesleyan doctrine is incorporated in most of your Judeo-Christian teachings today. They all got the Wesleyan doctrine. Okay? And those men, I guarantee you, if they were walking the earth today, would burn the churches down probably before they'd let them put their name on it, because it's not what God wanted them to be. John Wimber started something and it got out of hand, and John Wimber became an idol. Does anybody know what John Wimber started his church on? What the foundational faith was of? The Vineyard Movement? Gifts. He said, I don't see the healings like it was in the first century. So he pressed for the miracles to come. You know how John Wimber died? Cancer. They couldn't touch it. They prayed and they prayed and they prayed. Man can't say, I've got the gift. I can do what I want with it. Whose is it? God's. My book says this, he gives those gifts to every man severally as he, the Spirit of God, wills them. It's not our purpose. Everybody wants to do it in their own way, but it just don't work. It might last for a season. You might get a little light shining on you, but it ain't going to last, because it's going to be God's will and not yours. And if we start making our own choices, the light will go out quickly. But they were not worthy. Verse 9, he says, go ye therefore into the highways. The word literally is the exits. Okay? The exit road. There's two words. Exodus, hodas, which means the exit roads. Go to all the exit roads getting out of the city. Okay? And as many as you shall find, call them to the marriage feast. Is everybody you find, call them to the marriage feast. Who would that leave out? Nobody. Huh? Everything had been passed over before. He said, bring them all in. Doesn't that sound like reconciliation? He's going to get them all called in? And he said, so his servants went out into the highways and gathered together, how many? As many as they found, both bad and good. Whoa! He's going to bring the bad ones to the marriage? Did you hear that? Does that say that in your book too? It does, doesn't it? He said, bring the good and the bad, didn't he? I know that goes against the doctrines of the churches, but I'm sorry, it says it in the book. He said, both the bad and the good. Notice he even said the bad first. And the wedding was furnished with dinner guests. And when the king came to see the guests, he saw there a man which had not on a wedding garment. What is a wedding garment? Absolutely. See, you know how many people today is trying to come to the kingdom, to the wedding feast, without the righteousness of Christ? The name of Christ, the nature, the character, the honor, the authority of Christ? Yeah. That's where all this New Age religion and all this Eastern religion and all these false teachings out here, you can do it any way you want to. You can't. God has a pattern that we have to follow. And that pattern is the righteousness of Christ. Period. Isaiah 4 says it this way. In that day, seven women will take hold of one man. The one man is Christ. The seven women are the seven spirits of the seven churches of Revelation. And he says, these seven women will say, oh, said, no, I'm going to have to read it now. It's in Isaiah 4, 1. I get to doing things someplace else. I haven't been there for a long time in Isaiah 4. Okay. We're right here close. Isaiah 4. In that day, seven women shall take hold of one man, saying, we will eat our own bread. Whose bread?
Yeah.
Whose bread are we supposed to be eating?
Yeah.
His bread. His word. And wear our own apparel. See? Not his righteousness, but our righteousness. We want our own. Only let us be called by your name, your nature and character. Just call us a good person. We're Christians. Yeah, we're good. To take away our reproach. See? Ain't going to work, is it? It's not going to work. We can't just say words. We've come past this. I think Paul said there's a time when God winked at sin, didn't he? But now he calls all men to what? Repent. And repenting doesn't mean crying and begging or anything. It means changing the way we think. That's what we're talking about. Changing the way we think. There's only two ways to think. Natural or spiritual, which is the mind of Christ or the mind of the Father. There's not a whole lot of ways to think. It's either God or it's not God. Does that make sense? It's God or it's not. You could say it this way. There are saints and ain'ts. Right? Oil and water don't mix. And he said unto the man, said unto him, friend. Now notice he didn't call him a demon or a devil or somebody I'm going to burn in hell. What did he call him?
Friend.
He said, friend. How did you come in here not having a wedding garment? And he was what? Literally it says he was embarrassed. But you know when you're embarrassed a lot of times it's hard to say anything. Isn't it? See? Now the man wasn't sitting around naked. We're not talking about that. He just did not have the righteousness of Christ. Now when God addressed this man, and this was Christ speaking here, when the king spoke and said, friend, do you think he was mad at him? He wouldn't have called him friend if he was mad, would he? Sure. It just wasn't his time yet. See, the man tried to come through his purification process without going through the purification process. See, he tried to walk into tabernacles without ever experiencing his Passover and Pentecost. So he says, then said the king to the servants, bind him hand and foot and take him away. Now, why did he say bind him hand and foot? His works and his lifestyle. There's what he was after. See, he wasn't destroying the man. He was only trying to destroy what? The works. What does it say in 1 John 3 and 8? For this reason was the Son of God manifest, that he might destroy what?
The works
of the evil one. See? He just wants to get rid of those works. Okay. And take him away and cast him into what? Outer darkness. In the ignorant realm. In the realm of ignorance. Cast him out in there. He said, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And no place says that's hell. There's no place says hell. I have challenged countless numbers of ministries and other people who think they know something about this book. Show me one place in Scripture where God says he's going to throw any human being into a place called hell. It don't exist. It does not exist. In fact, Jesus even said that hell was created for the... That Jesus said he created hell for the devil and his angels. So that's not for us, is it? Are you a devil or an angel of the devil? Well, then I ain't got to worry about hell then, do I? By Jesus' words, okay? Then he says, because many are called, but few are what? Few are chosen or literally selected. Oh, okay, I'm sorry, I missed that part, didn't I? And there shall be weeping and a gnashing of teeth. I said I read that. Okay. What do you think that weeping and gnashing of teeth is? Huh? No, I think when you've it's been revealed to you, I think this is where a lot of people are going to come to. They're going to come to this outer darkness. And it's not a physical someone picking you up and taking you out and throwing you out in some place that's dark. It's going to you're going to come to a revelation that you're walking in darkness.
Don't you think that that verse, whenever he said he called him friend,
yeah.
What do you think that made him start thinking?
Well, go ahead.
Well, you know, he was probably starting to think, and, you know, the natural man will start thinking, well, who was this man? Why did he, mm-hmm. you know, why did he do this? That's when you start thinking with yourself at that.
Well, that's the natural man. I see this as the natural man in each one of us. And the natural man in me cannot go to the wedding feast. Doesn't say flesh and blood does not inherit the kingdom, right? See, and that's where the feast is, in the kingdom. So this natural man, he's going to be cast out into outer darkness where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. He's going to realize, I can't get there. See, I got to realize in myself, this flesh and blood body right here, and this is the whole struggle in the church realm today, everybody thinks they can make this guy acceptable. This guy's not acceptable. See? This, all these bodies that's in this room right now, they are not acceptable in the kingdom of God. These bodies were made for this earth realm. What is dwelling within you, the Spirit of God, is what's acceptable in the kingdom of God. We're not going to fluff and buff this thing and take it with us. And if we quit trying, guess what? Life becomes easy. Remember what Paul said in Romans? Who shall deliver me from this body of death? Have you ever heard it taught this way, that they used to take the dead body of somebody and strap it on the back of a murderer and make him carry the dead body around? We've heard that teaching, see. But see, I'm carrying a dead man around. Jesus was the last Adam. If he's the last one, what am I carrying one for? See? All of humanity is carrying this natural man who is dead around. And who's going to deliver me from this body of death? Christ. See? And I think he says that in Romans, where he says, the only translation that says it right is the concordant literal that has the word. Everybody else just looks over the word like it don't exist there. But it says, through grace. Through grace, through Christ, our Lord will be delivered. Okay? So we got to know that we can't take this man with us. This man is destined for outer darkness. See, because it never says they come back and brought this man back in, did it? Never said that, because the natural man is the one who is not going to get back. See, my natural man has one destiny. It says in Ecclesiastes 12:7, when we die, the dust returns to what? The dust. And the spirit returns to God who gave it. This man has one destiny. Dust. Hebrews 9:27 says it's appointed unto man once to die. See? I got a destiny, and it's going back to the dust from where I came from. See? I don't want this thing. I want to be what I am. I don't want this cloud, this smoke screen that's in front of me. I want the truth. And I can't get it from this flesh. It's got to be by spirit. And then verse 14, where it says, "For because many are called, but few are chosen." In Matthew 7, verse 13 and 14, what's it say? Strive to enter into narrow gate, because broad is the way and wide is the gate that leads to destruction, and many go therein, in thereat. And then, but narrow is the gate and straight is the way that leads to life. And how many find it? Few there be that find it. Isaiah says it this way. There's a very small remnant. In Kings or Chronicles it says there is 7,000 that have not bowed the knee to Baal. 7,000 out of millions is a small number, isn't it? Okay. So it's not talking about the majority. This is first fruit that's going to make it through the first way. Now we change. He said, then went the Pharisees and took counsel how they might entangle him in his talk. Now notice this. This is religious, folks, and this is what religion will do within you or me if I allow religion to get a hold of me and start reasoning with me. Now they're talking to Jesus, right? Who is he? The Christ, the Son of the living God, right? And he's the truth that's speaking to them, and they're going to go out and try to trip up his words. Does that sound like somebody that's maybe unteachable? Maybe stiff-necked, hard-headed? See? They're still not wanting to hear the truth. That's something that's got to be a desire in our heart above anything else that we come across. It's not what I think. It's not what Dave thinks. It's what God says. I want the truth over anything else. If I have the truth, guess what I've got? I've got it all. Because He is truth. And His words are truth, and they are spirit, and they are life, and they are light. If I have all that, what am I losing in anything else? Nothing. I've got everything I want in His truth. Okay? So I've got to want truth over anything else. My opinions, my idols, my thoughts, which are idols to me, when they're outside of God, they've got to go aside. I have got to make sure that what I am doing is what God says. I can't trust what my head tells me. I hear people all the time, they try to say, well, I experience God all the time. I'll say, well, Scripture says this. They'll say, oh, I'm not very big in the Bible. I just experience God. Well, you know what? You're going to experience some God you don't want. I'll guarantee you.
That sounds like a Pharisee.
Well, what that is people that's deceived. See, because the church has done so many wrong and stupid things, and they have, believe me, and we've all done them, haven't we? So they see the church as, they don't know squat. I'll go out and do it myself. I just made myself an idol. I made myself an island. I isolated myself from everybody else. And I'll just do whatever I think's right. And you know, I can go back and read the book of Judges. And you know what the last, it says it three or four times in there, but the last verse in there says, in those days there was no king in Israel, and every man did what was right in his own eyes. You know what? There was the dark ages coming. They started doing what was right in their own eyes. And that's what everybody's doing today. It's no different. We do what's right in our own eyes instead of seeing what God said. And see, if I have the mind of Christ, guess what? What does that tell you? If you have the mind of Christ, tell me what's something about you. Serious. Thinking. Huh? You can't have any thoughts outside of there. See, my thoughts don't mean nothing. That don't mean nothing runs through my head. But I'm saying whatever I do, if it's the mind of Christ, it's not mine, is it? Not of Him. You'll know it. See? How will you know? When in Matthew 24:24 it says, if it were possible, even the very elect should be deceived. I asked God very early in my life with Him, how can I be like that? How can I know I'm not going to be deceived? You know what His word was? Know my word. Very simple. Know my word. See, if I know His word, who do I know? I'll know Him. I'll know everything He does. So if I come up against God, I come up with something in my life, and many people say, oh, God did this, or God did this, or God said this, or God said that, and I hear it all the time, and yet what they said was not the nature of God. So you see what I'm saying? It wasn't the nature of God. So if it's not the nature of God, what do I do? You ever heard the thing where people say, I was led of the Spirit, or I felt led to do this, or I felt led to do that? I loaned a bunch of lead to a man one time to use it. And everybody held it. And he said things. Of course, he was using it in a very carnal way, but it was a good illustration. And people say, God told me to do this or that. Don't hold it. Don't touch it. Because that's not God. God's not going to tell you things outside of His Word, is He? Is God going to tell you to do something that He tells you in His Word to do? Is God going to tell you personally something that this book contradicts? Talk to me. See? Because then God would be contradictory, wouldn't He? And God cannot lie, can He? See? And people tell me all the time things, well, God told me. God didn't tell you. Yeah. In the same conversation, it could be changed four or five or six times. Come on. It's not God. God is not changeable. Romans 3:4 says, make God true and all men liars. If I say anything contradictory to what God says, guess what I am? I'd be a liar, see? So that's why I have to speak what God speaks. And if I don't know what God does and His nature and His ways, how could I judge in my thinking whether it's God or not? Could I? See, I got to know the Word. Do you think God wrote this book with 500,000 words in it and had the prophets write it down for no reason? To decorate a coffee table or the back window of a pickup truck? Come on. That's not what God wrote it for. He wrote it that we might learn His ways and how to live our life. And yet no one wants to know what it's about. And I can't fathom that. I can't get a hold of it. I can't grasp that. Okay, enough of the side trails. Then went the Pharisees and took counsel how they might entangle Him with His talk. And they sent to Him their disciples with the Herodians, saying, Master or teacher. Now this is really neat. You can hear it today. I mean, I think it's cute, but look what it says. Teacher, we know that You are true, and You teach the ways of God in truth, and You don't care for any man, because You regard not the person of any humanity. Now, they've already hung themselves with their statements. They've already hung themselves with their statements. I was with a man this week, and I was a lady that I graduated, well, she was a year older than me, graduated from the same school, and she said, we hadn't seen each other for a year, and I called her by her nickname, and she didn't recognize me, and she knew it was something out of the past because no one knows her name, that nickname, and except someone that was raised with her. So she came up and said, who are you? And I told her, and we got to talking. She said, I heard you're preaching. I said, yep, and we started talking. This other gentleman got involved in there a little bit, you know, and he made these statements. He said, this man, now he's talking about me, he said, this man is the greatest teacher there is around here. He said, you need to go to his church and listen to him. But he don't come. Do you see any duality in that? See, he's trying to convince someone else to come and hear me teach, but he won't.
Maybe they went to church
yet. No. He never knew this woman. He never knew her. See? People hang themselves with their words and they don't realize it. They don't realize about how hypocritical they are in those statements. See? I just think it's amazing. But most people that are like that, they think you're the stupid one. See? And when you underestimate someone, that's where you usually make your mistake. I may look stupid. I may look stupid. Whatever people think, that's, they can think what they want. But see, I know better. I can look like anything you want me to. But there's one thing you can't do, and you can't take the truth that He's placed within me away from me. I know it's there. See, my looks have no bearing to me at all. I'm not concerned about that. They can say what they want about my looks, but I do know what I'm talking about. Nope, you can't tell by the cover. And it ain't got much covering on it, but it's okay. He said, you don't care about anybody. You don't care about the person of men. He's not going to have favoritism or respect of men, he says. He said, tell us therefore, what thinkest thou? Is it lawful to give tribute or to give taxes unto Caesar, the governor, okay, or not? Is it lawful to pay taxes? There's people running around today that says the same thing. Is it lawful to pay taxes? A lot of people say it's not lawful. There's no law. It says you have to. You don't pay them, see what happens. They'll bite you sooner or later. But that's not the issue, see. They're trying to trip Him up.
They can't argue with Him in the spiritual truth, so
now they're going into the physical realm. But look here what Jesus said. He says here, but Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, because they don't believe what I'm teaching, and they try to trip me up in what I'm saying, and I say, I can perceive their wickedness in them, and I say, why are you testing me for, you hypocrite? What are they going to do to me? Now see, everybody says Jesus was this little meek lamb who never opened his mouth. He was just real nice all the time. He just sat there and called the religious leaders a bunch of hypocrites. Tell them. Now you married to one like that, but I just tell them the truth, saying that's okay. He says, so this word tempt here, it means to test, to scrutinize, or to entice. He says, what are you doing all these things to me for? You know, you hypocrites. See? They're acting like they're smooth guys, like they're real intelligent, and they're looking for information.
He's putting them in their place right there.
Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with it, as long as the attitude behind it is to expose and not to punish. See? People get on me all the time, you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that. I said, hey, I can expose. Christ exposes. He's always going to the heart of the issue. And if I can expose and help someone, I think I've said this many times in here, I'm willing to put our friendship, our relationship on the line to help you. And if it offends you, whose fault is it? Whoever's offended, that's the one that has the problem. But if I say something that offends you, do you know I've done you a favor? I turned a leaf over you had, or a rock over you hadn't looked under. And all God did was permit me to turn that rock over and let you see there was something hiding under that rock you hadn't seen yet in your life. See? It's okay. No condemnation about it. It's just the fact that if you don't have a relationship with someone, you'll never let nobody do that in your life. Because as soon as somebody turns that rock over, you're going to get mad. That snake under that rock will bite them, and then you'll get mad, and you'll go away. Yeah, you're eye hunting. Or snipe hunting or something. See? But someone who loves you is willing to put their relationship with you on the line to help you. See, that's the difference. It's not to hurt. I've said things to a lot of people in this room that was hard things to say. It wasn't said so I can say, see how much better I am than you. It's to say, I love you enough that I want to help you and there's something you don't see. How many times have I told you, Larry, just you, how many times have I told you, if I have done anything wrong, you owe it to me to tell it to me? Have I not told you that many times? I encourage you, if you think I've done something wrong, you bring it to me. We'll talk about it. And I won't get angry about it. Because if you can show me that I'm wrong in something, you've done me a favor, and I'll appreciate it. I won't be mad at you. But people who get upset about someone exposing their life, they got something going on. There's something hidden under that rock. They don't want turned over. See? And I want the rocks turned over in my life. I want them all exposed. Okay? And that's the way you should think too. And here's what he said. Show me the tax money. And they brought him a penny. And he said unto them, whose is this image and not superscription? The language literally says inscription. And they said unto him, Caesar's. And then he said unto them, render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's and unto God the things that are God. Now notice he throws something else in there. They didn't ask anything about that to God, did they? Did they? What'd they ask him? Is it lawful to give money to Caesar, to the governor, to pay taxes? And he said, give to Caesar what's Caesar's, but give to God what's God's. He added something in there. See, that was a freebie. Didn't cost you anything. He just let you know there's something else you need to do too. You need to do more than pay taxes. Didn't he? See, God's faithful enough to tell you what you need, even if you don't ask for it. And you know what? We'll never ask God for it. He has to come along and do it. And he has to put somebody in your life who will come by and say, hey, love you, but there's something here you need to see. You need to see it. That's what it's all about. Doesn't it say in Proverbs, iron sharpens iron? So does a man his friend's countenance. Us being together and having friction between us, everybody says, that's a bad thing. No, that's a good thing. Because if me and Ed does something all day long, and I step on his toes and he bites me, I see all kinds of good things there. First of all, when I stepped on his toe about something, And he responded, it showed me, first of all, that maybe I did something I shouldn't have done. And then secondly, he got exposed to him that there was a hide under his rock. And then I get tested to see if I'm going to respond to the serpent under that rock biting me. See? It just goes around a big vicious circle. But see, I see the good side of it. Because that was a blessing in disguise. See, we're wanting all the good stuff, and the good stuff will never change you.
Wanting all the positive, not the negative.
That's right. But see, the negative is the best teacher. It will show you. I think Atlas got one time in the form of a repairman, wasn't it? We've all got those things, see? But we have to learn to see them. Now, a lot of times going through, don't think for a minute, just as soon as you hear this, you're going around and everything's going to work that way. But you're going to come to a place where you start looking at the things positive. And see, it's a good thing. Well, bless God. You might get your hair shaved off before you get it. You never know. It's okay. And see, even the man that got his hair cut off today, and he was upset, he went outside. He didn't let the woman see him. He went outside and got in his car and went, "Argh!" You know. And then he said, "This is stupid. What am I getting upset about? It's just hair. It'll grow back." He said, "My hair grows like a weed. I have to cut it every time I turn around. So why not?" He said, "Well, foolishness. She done him a favor." Yeah. See, the character of God is who you are when no one is watching but God. That's your real character. That's what your character is. When I first saw that, I fell in love with it, and that's why it's in here. It stay here as far as I'm concerned from now on. I don't care what the decor of this place is. That picture with that writing on it said something to me years ago, and it has to stay here. It's not an idol. It's just telling the truth. It's a definite revealing. "And when they heard these words, they marveled and left him and went their way." Hello. They still didn't follow him. They went their own way, even with the Spirit of God talking to them with life and truth, and they still walk away. You know what? I see it all the time. I talk to people, and I share truth with them, and the book says, angels and kings have desired to look into this truth and could not. And I'll lay it before them, and they'll say, "Oh, that's interesting." Interesting? Walk on. Because when it's just interesting, they didn't hear a thing I said. When they tell me that, I just say, "Well, nice meeting you." Going on. That seed just hit the wrong side of the road in rocky soil. Just go on. But when you look in their eyes and you see tears come, you know that went into the good ground. And I'm going to tell you, all the ones I talk to, all the ones that fuss with me, when I touch that one and see life in their eyes, I forget about all the rest of them. It don't make any difference. Just to see life come into one of them. It's all that matters. "The same day came to him the Sadducees." You know why they're Sadducees? Because of the way they believe. See, if you'd be Sadducee too if you thought like them. Okay. Huh? No, yeah, there was a pun intended there. But you'd be sad, you see, if you thought like they did. "But they say that there's no resurrection. And they ask him, saying, 'Teacher, Moses said if a man die having no children, his brother shall marry his wife and raise up seed unto his brother. Now there were seven brethren. First, when he had married a wife, deceased, and having no issue or no seed," is what it should say, "left his wife unto his brother. Likewise, the second also, and the third unto the seventh. And last of all, the woman died also. They say, therefore, in the resurrection, whose wife shall she be of the seven, because they all had her?" Now, see, Jesus could answer this several ways. He knew they were Pharisees, didn't he? Sadducees, excuse me. He knew that, didn't he? And we know, by the teaching of the Sadducees, to believe there's no resurrection. Said so right there, didn't it? And they come and ask him a question about a resurrection. They've already went duality already. They've already shown the duality of their thinking. And they tried to trip him up. And look how Jesus responded. And he said, "Jesus responded and said unto them, 'You do err, not knowing the Scriptures nor the power of God.'" That answers everything. There's the error of everyone on the face of this earth. Every error that you make is for that reason right there. You don't know the Scriptures nor the power of God. See? It's all right there. You err not knowing the Scriptures nor the power of God. Now, when we say power of God, God has all power. I understand that. God can do anything He wants to. But see, supernatural power of God, what God's talking spiritual things, is not about all this miraculous healing and growing arms and resurrecting some physical body from the dead and putting life back in it. That's not the things God's talking about. That was all done in parabolic form because of the doubt and unbelief of the people's minds at that time. The greatest miracle there is when life comes in and overrides this carnal mind that's between our ears. That's the greatest miracle in the world. It's not natural for a human being to deny their flesh, is it? That's supernatural. And it can only be done by the Spirit of God. You can't physically control this thing. It can't happen. Okay? Because in the resurrection, Jesus said, they neither marry nor are given, okay, in marriage, but are as the angels of God in heaven. What do you think it's saying? Because in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are as the angels in heaven. What are the angels? But are they not spirit? See, all angels are ministering spirits, what the book says. See, so they're spirit. And spirit does not have the need for flesh, does it? Yep. Throw my hat here. Just a second. Okay. But as touching the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what was spoken unto you by God? Now here he's rebuking them a little bit. Now these are people, the Sadducees and Pharisees and all these religious folk, and he's saying, have you not read what was spoken to you by God? Now, a lot of people say, well, Moses spoke these words to him, or the prophets spoke to him. What did Jesus say? Who spoke to him? God spoke to him through the mouths of the prophets. That's what Jesus says.
Mm-hmm.
He is bound by His Word. But He don't want to do anything outside of His Word. He don't want to. That's the thing we have to realize. He doesn't want to do it out there. And you're right. He is bound by His Word. Now look at what He said. As touching the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what was spoken unto you by God, saying, look what He says, I am the God of Abraham, God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Three things there. Three different covenants there. That represents Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. The word Abraham, if you look in Abraham, Abraham's God was a God of covenant. He had covenants made to him. Isaac was his God done miracles for him. There's your Pentecostal realm. And Jacob was the God of change. He changed him. Do you hear me? And see, the change comes in the realm of Tabernacles. It does not come in Passover and Pentecost. The true change of the nature comes in Tabernacles. But that's what it's representing. And he says, God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. What did he just tell you?
You'd be dead.
No. Look. He said, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. He just told you, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is not dead. Didn't he say he was their God? And he said he's not the God of the dead, right? So what's he telling you?
They're alive.
Just because we don't see them in flesh, does that mean they're dead? See? Yeah, think. What does he say that for? Why would he say, I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'm not a God of the dead, but a God of the living. He's telling you Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are alive. And they are. And when the multitude heard this, they were astonished at his doctrine. I'm going to tell you, you tell them that today and they still believe it. They're astonished by it. Because their natural man, this flesh man, their natural thinking, their carnal thinking, can't understand and can't reason that someone is here. For thousands of years, they're still here, but we are. But when the Pharisees had heard that he had put or muzzled, literally the word language says this, he had muzzled the Sadducees to silence. They were gathered together. He muzzled them. All he did was told them the truth. Shut them up. What can they say? How can you come against the truth? And then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question. Literally, that word lawyer means he was an expert in the Mosaic law. Okay? Saying, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law, or the law of Moses?" Now see, this guy thought he was a pro. You know how many people today thinks they are literally walking Bibles? There are men and women who can quote literally, verbatim, the King James Bible and haven't got a clue who God is. They send these kids to Bible school and they bring them out and they've never experienced life. And they come out and they put them into a church. These denominations put them out, peddle them out here and there, and give them $30,000 and $40,000 and $50,000 and $60,000 and $70,000 and $80,000 and $100,000 salaries coming out of 2 years of Bible college, and give them a whole bunch of money, and they think that that kid is going to come in and tell parents and grandparents how to deal with your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, and they don't even have kids themselves. I don't think that works. This is a thing of this is an experience of God. It's not just an education. Sure it is. And that's what they do. And they think, and people think, because they've been to some kind of school and got a degree, that that makes them smart. Well, maybe they are smart, but they're ignorant of God's ways. God's ways does not come from intellect. It comes by the Spirit of God, only the Spirit of God. And the intellect will only go so long, and then it'll fall out. It can't agree. It cannot agree with the flesh. I mean, the Spirit can't. Okay. And Jesus said unto him, "You shalt love the Lord thy God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment." That's pretty plain, isn't it? Now, how many people love the Lord thy God with all their heart, soul, mind, and spirit? Yep, he was already experienced in the Mosaic law. That was his God. But how many people truly today love God with all their heart, soul, mind, and body? Few. And we're talking about church folk. Very few of the church folk. I'd be willing to say there's probably more people in the world that have a love for God in numbers than there is in church. I know people out there that never go to church that truly have a love for God, but they're ignorant of a lot of things, but they love God in any way, that, the best way they know how.
Most people that go to church are upset with God. That's why they keep coming.
Sure. They're mad at Him. Lots of people go to church that's mad at God. They're trying to straighten Him out. That's what they're there for. You'll get that later, won't you? Trying to straighten Him out. Okay. And the second commandment is similar unto it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Who's your neighbor? It's all humanity. It's not just the person that lives next door to you. It's everybody. And on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Literally, the language says for that word hang, the law and the prophets are summed up or based on these two commandments. Now, when he said that, notice the lawyer didn't have much more to say, did he? That love shut him up. While the Pharisees were gathered together, Jesus asked them, saying, "What think ye of Christ?" Or what do you think concerning Christ? Whose son is he? And they said unto him, and see, here's religion. Book says this, be swift to hear, slow to. Religion is swift to speak and never hears. I'm telling you the truth. They don't listen. Religion always wants to talk, and they think they already got it figured out. Do you ever know any of them like that? Yeah, somewhere they got it written down. They already know everything. So they're very quick to speak, and look what they do. They jump right out real quick and say, "He's the son of David." See, they know the law, they know the history, don't they? They know what genealogy was there because the religion taught it to them. If you ask anybody today, they'd say, "What do you think about Christ? Whose son is he?" And everybody can tell you, Jesus came out of the lineage of David, can't they? I mean, they teach that to little kids in Sunday schools, don't they? But do they really know what he's talking about? Let's see. He said unto them, how then, if he's the son of David, he said, how does David in spirit call him Lord, saying, the Lord said to me, Lord, sit thou on my right hand till I make your enemies thy footstool. Now, how did he say that? He said, give me grace here on these last three or four verses to put it together. In the 44th verse, he says, the Lord said unto me, Lord, sit thou on my right hand till I make your enemies. Literally, the word is a noun. It's not plural. It's not enemies. It's your adversary. This is a noun. It's a singular word. It's not a plural word. It's your adversary, not enemies or adversaries, plural. Okay? So, he said, I want to make your adversary your what? Your footstool. Now, where does the footstool go? Under your feet. So what he's telling you here in parabolic form, as he started from the very first part of the chapter, he said he spoke to them again in what?
Parables.
So he's telling you this is a parable again. And he said, I want to make your adversary be underneath your lifestyle. Your adversary is the natural. True or false? Adversary is in the natural. Dust and sand. They are on this earth. And when you ascend into the heavenlies, the star covenant, and didn't Paul say we are already seated in heavenly places? Presently, we're seated in heavenly places. That's the star covenant, okay? And when you get into the star covenant, guess what's under your feet?
Your old lifestyle.
It's down there, because that old lifestyle has no way to ascend to the heavenlies. Isaiah said it this way, there's a higher way. A highway, literally, it should say there's a higher way. Where the lions can't walk and the vultures can't even fly there. See, when we ascend to that place, this earthly realm has no pulling on you any longer. Do you understand that? There's nothing left. When you walk into the covenant of tabernacles, you no longer have any relationship with this world. That's why Jesus said, my disciples are in this world, but they're not of it. My kingdom's not of here. If we're in His kingdom, how can this world have any pull on us? And we have to come to a place in our life where this world no longer has a pull on us. We're free. Okay?
That's where we carry that dead man.
Yeah. Well, no, we ain't carrying the dead man no more when we get there. He's already dropped off.
They
keep trying to carry the dead man and think that's going to get him something fixed up, and it's not. Okay. Now he says, if David then can call him Lord, how is he his son? Verse 45. How can he call him? If David called the Lord his Lord, speaking to Jesus, okay, how is he his son? Look what it says. And no man was able to answer him a word, neither durst any man from that day forward ask him any more questions. Now he asked him a question and he shut him up. They could not answer it. And he gave them the answer right there. He spoke the answer to them and they didn't even hear it. Because religion never listens. It always blows off. Religion never listens. Do you hear me? I'm saying it for a reason. Religion never listens. It only speaks. Now let me take you back to verse 43 and give you the answer. He said unto them, how then does David, what? Now what's the next two words?
In spirit.
He told them the answer. He asked them a question, told them the answer, and they couldn't hear it. Do you see it? He said, how could David, he said, how then does David, in spirit, call him Lord? He told him he was in the spirit. It's the spirit realm. And in spirit, David is still under Christ, isn't he? Just like we are. But David was the father in the natural realm. And he told him in spirit. He gave him the answer. And religion did what? They plugged their ears. They couldn't hear. They're still listening in the natural. Their mind functions in this worldly setting. And Romans does say this, doesn't it? Romans 12, 1 and 2. I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present yourself a living sacrifice, which is wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, so you will know the good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. You can't do it any other way. The mind must be transformed. There's no answers outside of your mind being transformed by the Word of God. Don't care what anybody says. They can believe anything they want to. It's not going to be any skin off my nose. I'm just telling you the truth. And when you apply it in your life, you'll have the same thing that happens in my life. You'll come to know God in a way that you've never known before, that religion will never teach you, because religion can't teach you God. All they can teach you is rules, regulations, do's, don'ts, and law. God is a spirit, and He seeks those to worship Him how? In spirit and in truth. And if we do that, we have the contact and the relationship with God, and we don't need all the rules and regulations anymore. Absolutely. But see, they did not know it, did they? Even though He was the Son of God, He was speaking absolute, perfect truth, and their ears were closed to hear what He said. And I guarantee you, if we could right now manifest that setting right there when He was talking to these people, and He said, while they were gathered, oh, by the way, what do you think about Christ? If we could have been in that setting right there, and if we could stand right now and look upon that setting that was going on and see what was going on, I guarantee you, you could, talk to each one of those men that He was talking to, and I bet you not a one of them could have told you the answer that He gave you. And He gave them the answer right in front of them. I guarantee you none of them heard Him, or they would have been an answer, wouldn't there? Okay. Because none of them knew. It was all in the natural, up there in that meathead. Carnal mind, the enemy, the adversary. I'm done.